Hi, welcome to the Top 100 Project with Ryan and Bev Ellis. If you're a new listener, we invite you to check out our introductory podcast, our prequel episode, if you will, where we talk about our project analyzing the American Film Institute and their 1998 and 2007 lists of the greatest American films ever made. Warning, there are spoilers ahead. This podcast is meant to be listened to after you've seen the film.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
This is number 14 in the Top 100 Project, A Night at the Opera, which was not on the 1998 Top 100 AFI list, and then it slipped on in 2007 in 85th spot, right between Platoon and Easy Rider. Interesting trio there. A Night at the Opera was released by MGM on November 15, 1935, as I said last podcast, right between the premiere and release date of Mutiny on the Bounty. And this was the first MGM picture the Marx Brothers made after leaving Paramount. Another big hit at the box office, a huge blockbuster after the relative disappointment of Duck Soup for the brothers. And this is the first movie they made without Zeppo, which was gut-wrenching and devastating to all, I'm sure.
Well, but they neatly replaced him with Alan Jones.
And we'll get to him soon.
Yes.
But there you go. That was Bev's voice, and she's got the floor.
So I took some heat for not loving Duck Soup, or at least just not finding it very funny. Mm-hmm. And this movie definitely redeemed the Marx Brothers for me. I found this hilarious. Like, I had some really great laugh out loud moments, and I think I was just in general more charmed by this movie. I think I can count myself as a fan of Harpo, that's for sure. He's just great. He's won me over completely. I'm crazy about him, and I think I'll watch more Marx Brothers movies, if for no other reason, just to see him again, because I don't know if I can even think of a single comedian ever who has his combination of mischief and childishness and talent, too. It's not just that he's hilarious, which he is, but he also plays the harp, and he does some really incredible acrobatics in this movie that are mind-blowing and hilarious. I really love that part.
I read that he did his own stunts, which he also mocked himself for doing as a 47-year-old man, to do maybe not every one of those stunts, but most of them. The one where he's hanging off the edge of the boat and being dipped in the water, and then all the trapeze stuff at the end. But it is very impressive. Very Buster Keaton-esque. And yes. Buster Keaton had a hand in this movie, I read somewhere.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know if he was a gag writer or what exactly he was doing, but that by that point, as we said during the general podcast, he didn't last much longer as a big name. And by this point, he was still working in Hollywood, but he was doing things like being a behind-the-scenes guy.
Oh. Well, I could see how he would be good at blocking something like that. There's so much choreographing going on there, and it's just so many stunts, like so much physical action going on.
I think I know why you like the ending. It is funny, and it is really well choreographed, but it's also got very little Groucho.
Oh, yeah, I still don't like Groucho.
I even said to you at one point, we apologize to a loyal listener. She doesn't like him much more. Maybe a little bit more, but not much more.
I disliked him less, I'll put it that way.
There you go.
You
just don't find him funny. You said that to
me. I just don't find him funny. I don't know. I get how the writing is smart and it's sharp, but there's something about him that just doesn't win me over.
You even said that another actor delivering the same lines might make you laugh.
I know. I'm sure that that's going to
throw some
people against
me. For those who actually watch Marx Brothers movies, you are definitely in the minority when it comes to that. I don't think he's as funny as other people think he is either, but I definitely enjoy him, and he makes me smile or chuckle. I don't laugh out loud that much at him, but I do like where he goes with his things and how he does.
I kind of get why.
He's very original.
Yes, yes, he is. And I get why people like him. And there isn't really much else like him, or especially writing-wise. I don't think there's a lot of people who do it as well as he does. I think he's just not my thing. That's all. Mm-hmm. It's just not for me.
I think a very big fan of his is also quite famous as Rob Zombie, because there are all kinds of Marx Brothers movies, and mostly Groucho's names from his movies used in, I think it's both The Devil's Rejects and the previous movie, which I forget, is it House of a Thousand Corpses? Forgive me.
So let's talk about what changed for the Marx Brothers in between Duck Soup and Night at the Opera. They left Paramount, and initially they were not even necessarily going to make movies anymore. They flirted with all kinds of ideas. Zeppo left and became an agent. He started an agency with Groucho, which actually did quite well. He was very good at his new career. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until they were convinced by Irving Thalberg,
who had an award named for him at the Oscars. They don't do it every year, but once every couple of years, or maybe every 5 years, they'll give it to a producer. Spielberg's won it. Lucas has won it. Eastwood has won it. I think Redford may have won it. Beatty definitely won it. And it's named after him. He was a whiz kid. He was a young man when he got to be a producer with MGM.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been given credit. I've read a lot of things, including about this movie, about how he really shepherded productions.
He's like a fixer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he convinced them to come to MGM.
Mm-hmm.
And he changed their format. You know, previously it was just all of their cockamamie gags, and it was about packing as many laughs as they could into the movie without any, like, real complete plot structure or vision.
Like Duck Soup.
Like Duck Soup, and not really focusing much on the peripheral characters. It's just all about the brothers and them and their wackiness. But he focused them, and he kind of applied all these traditional screenwriting or storytelling elements to make the whole film more cohesive and to make the audience root for them more. I think that,
yeah,
that, and that really worked for me. I have to admit, after I read that, I was like, oh, maybe that's why I liked it more, because the difference is that they no longer are just causing mischief to anybody who's unlucky enough to cross their path. Now they only pick on villains, mm-hmm, and they have these heroes that they're kind of advocating for and trying to help these lovers get together so that you can root for them. I agree that that improved the film. I think that that's part of the reason why I may have enjoyed it more than Duck Soup. Although, that being said, I really missed that edge that Duck Soup had. This is like a much more kind of sanitary, safe movie than Duck Soup was.
With a love story subplot that's straight out of central casting, central scripting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, I read a thing about how Roger Ebert, who loves this movie, mm-hmm, how he admitted himself that he fast-forwards through the songs. I don't know if I would fast-forward through all the songs, but I'm pretty sure that when the two lovers are serenading each other on the boat, when she's on the boat and he's in the dock, I could be wrong, but I think that song lasts upwards of 30 or 40 minutes, or at least it feels that long, because it was pretty dull.
Well, if you remember, there were a few zany musical sequences in Duck Soup that kind of came
out
of nowhere.
That were hilarious!
Like a half-assed musical, we said at the time. And this time they actually stopped the story cold to, mm-hmm, sing.
For not funny. They're not even funny songs.
Now, Kitty Carlisle and Alan Jones, who play those lovers, who are both trained as singers, they're certainly very capable. But yeah, there's no humor. There's no really. I mean, I guess the Jones has a little bit to play with the brothers here and there. He's one of the guys wearing the fake beards in that one sequence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Jones takes on the Zeppo role in this movie. Zeppo often played the romantic, mm-hmm, lead in their movies when he was one of the four brothers, and now it's Jones that does it. And we still have Margaret Dumont. And Siegfried Ruhmann plays Gottlieb. He became a regular with them after this movie, too. Starting with this movie, I should say. We talked about Thalberg a minute ago. One more thing I want to say about him is that Groucho seemed to think that this, Night at the Opera, and A Day at the Races were the two best Marx Brothers movies. They're both made by MGM and with direct influence by the producer, Irving,
yeah,
Thalberg.
Yeah.
So essentially he's saying it's because of him. Groucho said something like, we made a couple of really good pictures, those two I just said, a couple that were okay, and some that were deplorable. So at least he was able to critique his own work, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So much I like that. He really did give him credit for improving it. And the movie was a hit, too. It was, mm-hmm, really, really, yep, popular. It made lots of money, and audiences loved it.
Except, like you said, a lot of critics who wrote about the movie years later, including Roger Ebert, they didn't like this new style and the loss of so much of the absurdities and aimless non-plots. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'd throw a coin in the air. How's that? Maybe the Duck Soup style is funnier, although it wasn't for you. Maybe the Night at the Opera version is a better story, but it does have a lot of dead spots.
I guess so, and I can see if I was a loyal fan of the Marx Brothers, and then this movie came out, and it was so much more kind of homogenous Hollywood, I could see how that would be a gigantic disappointment.
Yeah. I said a few minutes ago they stopped the story cold for musical sequences, and I told you in Duck Soup that they don't do it in that movie, but they do in this, that Harpo plays the harp and the piano. I'd forgotten he did that, and Chico plays the piano, and these guys could have done those things for a living.
That
could have been their career. They're both brilliant
musicians. Chico, like him on the piano, was really...
And doing it kind of Victor Borgia style, where he's playing the piano brilliantly, but doing it kind of quirky.
With his fingers.
So good. And I mean, looking at the piano sometimes, he looks at the kids around him, as does Harpo.
I really like that, actually. I really enjoyed that little
so
scene. That whole musical sequence of that song and them playing the instruments, I actually really enjoyed that whole part.
Yeah, or that scene, I should say, is just an excuse for them to show off, but okay, fine. When it's
I know.
Okay.
You have something show. One more thing that Thalberg did with the Marx Brothers to differently with this movie is that they actually tested the script and gags out with live audiences in kind of vaudeville type shows. I mean, that's where they got their start, to see which worked better, to improve the gags and kind of finesse them until they were as good as they possibly could be. Notoriously, the stateroom sequence, which wasn't working,
mm-hmm,
and then they finally, after a night of improvising it, throwing the script away, got it to work and found a way.
Originally, the point of that scene was to end with Groucho being forced into the hallway to change his pants.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed to the scene as we know it now. We're going to get to that in 1 second. One more thing about Thorberg that I will now add. I also read that after an unsuccessful preview, they did some editing and tweaking, and that turned the tide even more because it didn't really work.
They cut minutes out of it. It was just a timing thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, test audiences, not always a bad thing. You guys...
Definitely not. No. Yeah. For all of the people have said negatively about that stuff and big-time directors, there's a useful place for it.
Yeah. When you listen to them in the right way, I suppose, you can actually use them to improve your movies.
So the stateroom scene, we've gone this long, and we'll finally get into the most famous part of this movie, which you didn't laugh at that much, and I don't know that it's all the hilarious either. It's definitely clever.
Yes.
And like we just said, they changed it and they made it more interesting than it probably was originally. It's so absurd, too. Like, these two women are trying to change a bed and there's four people standing on it, how they're ever achieving anything. But it does pay off pretty well that the food finally arrives, that all the hard-boiled eggs, and that's is what
they actually have Harpo's rolling on the trays on the top. Yeah, I noticed that.
Because he's narcoleptic and he's asleep,
I didn't laugh. I didn't really find it laugh. I love funny, but I still loved it. I thought it was just great.
That's the most famous part of this movie.
Oh, yeah. I can see why.
Pretty easily.
But I love the ending, too. The ending was great.
Out of 14 movies we've now done, that is definitely one of the top two or three most famous things that has yet appeared in an AFI movie, I think, as far as reputation of the scene, influence, all those kinds of things.
And there's a lot of competition because there's lots of incredible similar sequences in the Chaplin films and in the general.
But there's not much more that we can really say about it. If you've seen the movie, you know what we're talking about. And it's...
If not, I'm sure it's on YouTube.
Yeah, gotta be on YouTube.
It's very entertaining. It was really great.
The man who directed all of these scenes was Sam Wood. He was a sentimentalist, I would call him. And his movies included Goodbye, Mr. Chips, The Pride of the Yankees, which I like a lot, but it's very sentimental. For Whom the Bell Tolls, which I've not seen. And also another Marx Brothers flick, the other one that Groucho seemed to love, A Day at the Races. So a pretty good resume for him. But Groucho didn't seem to be a very big fan of his. He called him humorless and rigid and wasn't able to work with him, I guess is what he was implying, and yet, ironically, he worked with him twice.
Yeah, I was just going to say. If he hated him so much, it's funny he would work with him on another feature.
And Wood, like Frank Lloyd, who directed Mutiny on the Bounty, the podcast we did last week, Wood directed dozens of silent movies. It's remarkable to watch some of these directors who are now well into the sound era, but look at their resume, and we're just... John Ford's another one. When we finally get to him, he directed so many movies that were silent, and Wood's the same, as was Frank Lloyd. Wood is one of the people, I'm sure Thalberg was another one, who insisted the romance and musical sequences were necessary to offset the constant barrage of joke, 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 joke. So again, wherever Groucho may have thought of him, he did help shepherd the movie into a more cohesive kind of style. But like a lot of other comedies that era, he just set up the camera and let Groucho and Chico and the rest go to town in some of these scenes, including the party at the first part scene. That's another one of the famous scenes from this movie for sure, the whole contract scene. The camera does not cut for minutes at a time. Long sequence. And a pretty funny one, too.
So I noticed when we were watching the movie that there's all these, like, sloppy jump cuts. And the whole, like, beginning was I found very confusing because they never set up where everybody is. Didn't know if they were in Europe, and they kept talking. Everybody's speaking English with American accents, and then they talk about going to America, and I found it really confusing. And then I learned later that there's a whole missing scene that sets up that they are in Italy.
Yeah.
But that, along with other references to Italy, were removed, obviously poorly, sloppily, removed from the print during the Second World War to eliminate all references to Italy because they were at war at the time.
And they couldn't find...
And then they lost it. Yeah. And then they lost it. So now the version that we have is this incorrect version that can never be restored to the way it was meant to be.
I also read the very beginning of the movie was supposed to have been the MGM Lion Roar. It would have been the three brothers taking their turns at it with doing their own version of a roar, and Harpo would have used this horn.
Which
would have been clever.
But there was no explanation for why that was never used.
Okay, so we're about ready to wrap it up, but before we go, we have three things to talk about. One, I haven't asked you as often in the last few podcasts, and that is the placement on the list. 85 and 2007 didn't make the first list. And also in comparison to the movie Duck Soup, which you weren't a fan of, which went up so many spots from the first list to the second. What do you think of A Night at the Opera being 85th? I don't think it should be on this list, by the way.
You don't think it should be at all?
There have been a few that I think I agree with you about Intolerance, maybe not Truly Belonging, but I get the influence of it. I get the relevance of it. This movie is enjoyable, but I don't think it's one of the 123 maybe greatest movies we've ever seen. This is my first flat-out disagreement, like it or not.
I mean, it surprises me that Duck Soup is so much higher. That first of all, that even there would be two movies on the list from the Marx Brothers, because like you say, there. And I said this about Duck Soup. It's funny. It's clever. It's certainly a classic, but cinematically, it's really
ordinary.
ordinary. This one more so than Duck Soup. At least Duck Soup was something daring and intelligent and challenging, whereas this is just kind of, as much as I found it funnier, you're right, it's more of a common film, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Although, I feel bad saying that, because they have an uncommon talent, but it's, I see what you're saying.
Although it's interesting that I said a few podcasts ago with, that happened one night, or I think it was that one, that there are very few comedies on this list. Mel Brooks says on the AFI show, AFI, where are all your comedies? And yet, we've done so many already, and we still have so many more in the next couple of weeks.
I have always, as we've been doing this, I've found it really strange how many old comedies there are, because comedy doesn't age well. Yeah. So, like, as we go along, as we're doing this chronologically, the more current we get, the fewer comedies there are.
There are going to be very few when we get towards the end.
Which I think is strange.
Pulp Fiction has moments of humor, but it's not a comedy.
Yeah, it's Forrest not a comedy.
You can say the same thing about that. Fargo, I suppose, is supposed to be a comedy. I think that might be the only one you can really say that about.
But even that is...
And Toy Story is funny moments, but it's animated. It's not truly a comedy. The two Marx Brothers movies clearly are comedies. The Chaplin movies clearly are comedies. The General, clearly. It Happened One Night. And a few of the ones we're going to see very soon in the next couple of weeks. So, anyway, that's interesting that Mel Brooks and me and others have said, where are your comedies, AFI? Yet there are plenty on this list, really. But as you say, early on. Okay, so the influence of this movie. There's not a ton. I don't think you can really say that many people made movies based on A Night at the Opera. But what there is influence from with this movie would be music videos, TV shows, and other movies, actually, have parodied mostly the stateroom scene. That's the most influential part of A Night at the Opera, for sure, would be that one scene.
Yeah, definitely. When you look on Wikipedia, there's a list of like a dozen movies that have done their own homage.
Including Seinfeld as well. I said TV shows. Seinfeld where Elaine is in some closet, and they're all in there, and they all come bursting out. I guess the other thing that was influenced were the Marx Brothers' own movies, because they became formulaic.
Yes.
Not that that's a bad thing, but they became this formula.
This movie set the formula for their movies from then on. Yeah.
Okay, so we wrap it up, as always, with the awards. And there's not a lot here. It was 12th on the top 100 comedies list, top 100 funny, so nearly the top 10. Not a surprise there. Duck Soup also finished high on that list. I think that one was 5th. So the Marx Brothers are well-loved by the funny folks and the AFI voters. And we haven't done this in a few weeks now, I don't believe, but National Film Registry winner, if you will. It was put on that list. They're preserving it in 1993. This is a short podcast for once.
Yeah.
But I think that's about all we have to say about A Night at the Opera.
Definitely recommend it.
Recommendable, not AFI-able.
Yeah.
I would say the next movie we're going to watch, you can't say that about, that is not AFI-able. You have not yet seen it. We still, by the way, folks, after 14 movies, have not seen a movie that Bev has seen before. We're getting close, but not
yet.
We're almost there. So anyway, up next on the Top 100 Project is our third and final Charlie Chaplin flick, Modern Times.
Yes, and going back, it's not a silent film, but it's a very close to being a silent film, isn't that right?
The last movie we could call silent, really in any sort of way.
And this is a movie, gosh, I've been meaning to see this one for a long time. I can't believe I've never seen it.
That's next week.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yep.
All right. Well, in the meantime, for more from Ryan and me, please visit our website, top100project.com. You can reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @top100project. And